This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 262.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. This last week has been the most insane week of our lives, so I'm thankful that we can be here in this room together, just you and me, recording an episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. It almost feels like things are starting to get back to normal.
Yes, that's because we are now past all of the birthdays and all of the things starting up that we need to remember how to make routine.
All right. Well, welcome everybody to the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Nitra.
That's me.
All right. We're going to get this show started with a fact about our number 262. Technically, this is not a fact about the number 262.
Okay.
Technically, this is a fact about 262.
Oh, like a formation for a defensive formation or something?
A formation would be a good word to use. Have you ever heard of the white notation, W-H-Y-T-E?
Yes.
No, you haven't. That is a dirty lie.
No, I definitely haven't. I'm trying to think in what context I have.
Okay, you think I'll sip my beverage.
I have no idea.
That's what I thought. Okay, so the white notation is a form of notation that is used to describe locomotives.
Okay, it makes sense that I would have heard of this because my grandpa was a huge train nerd.
Okay. Well, the nerds.
So I have in fact heard of
it. The train nerds will rejoice. So what this means, 262, is it's talking about the types of, I guess it would be wheels, the big metal wheels that are on the locomotive. And the 262 describes two small wheels in the front on one axle, and then three axles of larger wheels.
So six more wheels.
So six wheels. And then one axle at the back again with two wheels on it. 262 notation. So the most well-known type of locomotive in the United States that used 262 was the Prairie locomotive. They were usually tender locomotives, but in Europe, tank locomotives would use the 262 setting or configuration for locomotives. There were, okay, ready for this? I found a list of 83 different locomotive configurations of wheels.
Train nerds. Yes.
Right? Like, I guess I didn't realize there were so many different kinds of ways to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So it turns out, like, with the 262, and I got lost on Wikipedia on this, there were some basically wobble issues, racking issues with it, and it, like, couldn't really stay straight,
okay.
So they never put passengers on them. So they're used for a lot of freight stuff and stuff like that. They were mostly a narrow-gauge engine. So they didn't really use them a lot in the United States in general.
Sure.
But the most common one in the United States was the Prairie. It was a 262 configured locomotive. And that is my fact about the number 262.
All right, I'll take it. That's kind of cool.
For all of you ticket to ride nerds out there, you can just call them all 262s in honor of this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. You know, if you want.
All right. Speaking of things you may not have ever heard of, have you ever heard of the fun ratio?
I mean, I feel like I could come up with a bunch of definitions for what I would like to call the fun ratio, but I feel like none of them are going to be accurate for what you're talking about.
All right. Well, our sponsor, First Move Financial, can tell us more about what the fun ratio is.
Okay.
It is a tool parents can use to help their kids make decisions around buying their wants, the things they don't need, like toys or games.
Mm-hmm.
The fun ratio.
Or food. They don't need food. They just run on sugar.
Maybe certain kinds of food. The fun ratio is the number of hours of fun per dollar spent.
Okay. This is, I mean, we talk about this with board games all the time.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, at least you and I do.
Yeah.
So that flashy, expensive toy that doesn't get played with more than once, that has a really low fun ratio. That $6 cotton candy that is gone in 10 minutes, same.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But Zombie Kids Evolution provided our family hours and hours of fun. We're talking, I think we're at like maybe 10 hours invested into the game now for not a whole lot of money.
It's $20.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's $2 per hour. That's a good deal.
For three kids and maybe an adult.
Yeah. The point of this isn't to encourage your kids to be cheap, but no, the point really is to compare options and think about how their money is best enjoyed. It's not always the best way to make decisions about money. We as adults know that sometimes we need to spend lots of money on things that are no fun at all, like car repairs. But it can be a helpful framework, especially for your kids. Having conversations like thinking about the fun ratio can help your kids understand how to get the best use out of their money and establish good habits for the future. This idea actually comes from a book, The Opposite of Spoiled, written by Ron Lieber. And if you want to talk about this or other ways to equip your children for their future, you can go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers and schedule a time to talk to First Move Financial today.
All right. Thanks so much to First Move for sponsoring this episode of the show. So we've got a bunch of things packed into this one. So first, we're going to talk about what we've been playing, like we always do. We are going to welcome our new community members.
Yep.
It was my birthday recently. I received some gifts. One of those gifts is something that we are going to eat on the show for science. I actually teased this on the last
show. Oh, you did tease this last time, yes.
And here's what we're going to do. It's actually kind of a two-part thing. We're going to do the first one, and then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to do the second one.
Okay.
That's how we're going to do it. We're going to bookend the break with our four science segment. And then this week, we're going to talk about something that we've kind of talked about.
We've danced around
before,
for a while.
But we're going to specifically address board games and screens and the intersection of those two things.
Yeah, there are lots of options and there are lots of places that we as parents can fall on what we deem acceptable for our kids to do and what we don't.
Right. So we're not going to tell you what is or isn't acceptable. That is 100% a subjective thing.
Yes.
But we're going to do kind of like a summary level, talk about some of the options that are out there. Maybe you'll hear something that you don't know about. Maybe you know about all these things. And what I would really like, actually, and we'll encourage you again at the end of the show, is if any of these are topics that you would like us to really get into deeper, let us know, because then maybe we'll do an episode specifically on one of the kind of subtopics underneath board games on screens that we're going to be talking about second half of the show. All right?
All right.
All right, so why don't we talk about what we have been playing lately? We've got a couple of new ones on the list, and then we're going to get into all that other stuff.
All right.
All right, so number one on the list, this is a game that we got from Weird City Games. This is Canopy.
This was kind of a weird game.
Yep, so Canopy is a two-player game. It is a it's a drafting game. It's a card
it's a drafting game
where you... We couldn't remember where we saw this mechanic before. Did you ever remember?
I have definitely seen this mechanic before, and I cannot remember where.
Right. Well, it's kind of similar to the mechanic in something like a Century or something like that, except the cards are hidden. So you start on the left side on your turn, and you look at the cards in the stack, and if you want them, you just take them. And if you don't want them, you put them back face down, and you put another card from the deck on top, and then you go to the next stack. And you can't go backwards. And you look at those, and eventually you either decide, yes, I want this stack of cards, or no, I don't want this stack of cards, or you get to the end where you just blind draw one off the top of the deck. You are using these to populate your jungle. In your jungle, you can have all sorts of animals. You can have, eventually, seeds. You can build trees, and there's a kind of a combination of tree trunk cards or a canopy card. You get one canopy card on a tree to generate some points near the end of the game. So there's some set collection and a little bit of, I would say, card synergy, kind of, with the cards that you're putting into your jungle. There's also some bad cards that you might be forced to take.
Yes.
And pretty much at that point, it becomes kind of a point salad kind of thing, where you're trying to collect sets, and some of the animal cards might give you like little special abilities that you can do either once per round or at the end of the game or stuff like that. But that's pretty much the game. That's pretty much a game of Canopy. We did not play with the advanced cards, which makes things a little bit more complicated because it was our first play. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Do you feel like I missed anything?
No, it seems about right.
Okay. What do you think?
It was just kind of weird getting into it. It was especially irritating that I 100% remember this exact mechanic of look at the pile of cards. If you don't want it, put it back face down and put another card on it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that mechanic from another game. I do not remember what that game was.
I almost think it negatively, because you kept talking about this, I almost think it negatively impacted your experience because you were so bothered that you couldn't remember where you had seen this before.
By
the way,
my focus.
If you have seen this before, email anitra@thefamilygamers.com. She's losing her mind about this thing. It's killing me. She's going through all the games on my shelf. I'm trying to work, and she's like, I mean, she's like a crazy person trying to go through all my games, trying to figure out. No, I'm just kidding about that. But But seriously,
it is bothering me, though.
If this mechanic is something that you remember, you have seen before, something like that, please definitely let us know, because we're trying to figure out and we're not having success.
But other than that, I like that as a drafting mechanic in a two-player game. It works well to decide to pass things up until the pot gets too rich, mm-hmm. or try to force somebody else to take mm-hmm. stuff. The set collection aspects of Canopy were a little strange. You basically have open-ended sets, which are your trees that you're building, and then your kind of typical set collection where it's like, oh, you get points for having, you know, one or two or three, but you lose points if you have four, with that
kind
of stuff.
Yeah, that reminded me of Go Nuts for Donuts. Right. This is the place where I've seen
that
the most.
That sort of variable scoring. Yep. Mm-hmm. But then there were tons of these pairs of wildlife.
Okay, so what they were really going for there was theme and sticking to the theme.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was all about mating pairs. And a pair, like, so the, I don't know, the poison dart frog or something was 2 points for one, 5 points for two, 7 points for three, because you have the 5 points and the 2 points. Like, it made sense.
But the thing is that all of these animal pairs, most of them there seem to only be two in the deck. And often one of them would have a special power, so it wouldn't actually get you any points on its own, but you could use it for its special power and try to hang on to it and hope you got the other one of that pair
I think there were more.
Some varieties
some
had more, yeah.
Or something. Yeah. Like, we played the game one time, so that it's really, really hard to gauge that, and you do pull cards out at the beginning to kind of randomize it a little bit, but there are fire cards and disease cards. The fire cards destroy your plants. We didn't really talk about plants, but there's plants too. The plants are the kind of
the more typical set collection stuff. Yeah.
3 points, 0 points, 6 points, 0 points, 10 points kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the fire destroys plants, the disease destroys animals. And there were then these seed cards, which you would draw from the seed deck, which was extra other cards.
Yeah, I think the point of the seed deck is no matter what you get out of the seed deck, it's going to be good. It's going to be like the better things you could get out of the regular deck.
Right. And it's you draw three, you pick one.
And you draw three and pick one.
So that's a little bit better.
Yeah.
But if you want to give them credit, I think it's Tim Eisner's company. They leaned into the idea of this being very environmentally friendly. Like, they leaned into it pretty hard. So the game box had some of those circle stickers that a lot of people don't like. If you are careful, you can pull them off and leave no residue. I pulled all four of them off. There was no residue anywhere. So you got to be careful with it. That's all. But inside the box, they actually had envelopes instead of plastic baggies. And I will say, envelopes are not quite as nice as plastic baggies, but they're far more environmentally
friendly. They're slightly more of a pain to deal with. Right? But they're so much more environmentally friendly.
The cards were not wrapped in plastic. They had a paper band around them.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear that this was not just some kind of like, hey,
we're not just
going to
slap this theme on a thing.
Yeah, about the rainforest. This game, they put thought into how to package this game. It's a relatively small box. It is full. It's not like,
it's not they can't close it full.
I don't need instructions to put the stuff back in the box, but it's not wasting a whole bunch of space. And so it is evident that they put effort in to do that.
Yes.
And I think that the piece that I noticed the most with was the kind of the paper envelope things for the pieces. And the only reason I mention it is because it's not like they said, oh, let's take the environmentally friendly option. Like, they clearly thought about it.
Right.
So right. I thought that was nice as well. It's a game that I want to play more. I'm a fan of, you know, two-player only games because it means that I don't have to try to play it at a whole bunch of different player counts. Although, ironically, it is a two-player game, but it has instructions for the 1, 3, and 4-player variants.
I think that's kind of wonderful because I've played enough games that are like, oh, this is best at 3 players or more, but here's a 2-player variant.
Right. It's kind of cool that they started
sort of
at 2
opposite,
and then branched out.
you branched out.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so that's Canopy from Weird City Games. We're definitely going to play that one more, and then we'll share our thoughts.
Yeah. So last week on the show, we talked about Mythalix.
Yep.
And I have played it twice since then.
I have played it once.
Yes.
All right.
This, at least to my mind, is like the ultimate teenage boy game.
I mean, I agree with that.
You know, there's a board and there's all these accessories and it looks really cool and it's not anywhere near as complicated as it looks.
So if you go to the Family Gamers community, we did have a picture of the game that we were actually playing last night that Nick shared for us. My feelings on Mythalix. Okay. Everything that Anitra said is true. And it's also a teenage boy game. because, like, it's not super balanced. Like, the cards you pull can be functionally useless, or they can be practically, like, game-changing cards. The powers on the gods are not terribly balanced either. My ultimate power, or whatever it was awful.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
I mean, mine was too, and never got used. So,
yeah, I used mine one time, and it actually did end up helping me.
See?
I will confess. But it was, you know, it was
kind of lame, though.
Yeah. It was like the perfect confluence of events that made it actually help me. My biggest frustration with the game so far is that the whole point of this game is to power up your gods.
Yes.
And make them faster, make them more powerful, give them higher defense.
Yes.
Make them just like paragons of deity, right?
Yes.
The board doesn't change, really. You can put strongholds on certain locations, but all the other locations that you can beat up at the beginning of the game with a little bit of luck, at the end of the game, you are just
you
mashing.
You just walk across
just
them.
Just mashing through them. And I actually was kind of frustrated by that, because at that point, it really felt like it was a total crapshoot at the end. I mean, that's how it felt.
So here's my thoughts. The game that you and I played was a four-player game.
Yep.
In a four-player game, you absolutely must go after the other gods in order to steal these elements that you need to win.
Yeah.
In anything less than a four-player game, you can get away with not doing that. You might want to do it once, but you can just travel around the board and try to get the elements instead. And I think that's part of where your frustration with the board came in, because you felt like, man, I should be able to do more with the board at this point. And the thing is that in a four-player game, it really does funnel you into stop caring about the board, go fight each other.
Yeah, but the problem with that is that everybody's defense starts at 20.
Yep.
And it's hard to get there fast.
Well, but that's the point you're saying, like, near the end of the game, when you can, you know, yes, there are spaces on the board where the defense is 6. Those are designed for the early game.
Yeah, I need to play this
spaces
game more.
That are at
I'm concerned
20 and
that
more
this game is going to have a real issue with a runaway leader situation.
I think it can, although I would think in a 3 or 4 player game, you would tend to say, hey, let's gang up on the person in the lead, which is definitely possible as long as you can reach them.
Yeah, I felt like there was maybe another layer of polish that the game needed.
I agree with you on that.
And that's, I think, and it's a little bit of everything. It's not like this one thing is clearly broken.
Right. It's still a good game. Mm-hmm. It's still a fun game. It just kind of felt like maybe things didn't mesh quite as nicely as
this game
like.
Is a lot less strategic than I expected it to be. And I think that's ultimately where I'm going to land.
And I think that's some of your frustration. But that's also, again, why I say, like, this is the teenage boy game.
Right.
I just want to throw stuff at this. I get to throw dice. There's tons of luck. I'm going to buy more cards and they're going to help me power up. And then it's more luck on the die rolls.
Right. But also our 10-year-old, who is our board gamer,
mm-hmm.
he cannot play this game with his best friend.
Oh, no.
Because his best friend would not be able to cope with being attacked like this.
Yes.
Like, it's mean. It can be really mean. I pulled a power card in this game.
Yes.
Literally, before I played this card, I looked around and I said, okay, I just want to make sure that we all understand that what happens in the game stays in the game.
Yeah, and then you stole my most powerful card from me.
And gave you hot garbage in return.
Yes.
Yes. But you let me sleep in the bed last night.
I did. I was very annoyed in game, but yeah. It's a game.
But that's okay. As long as you're annoyed in the game, it's fine. It's fine.
You're not going to expect this comparison, but it actually reminds me a little bit of Pan Am, in that at 2 players, it was very laid back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we could go attack each other if we want to, or we can just do our own thing.
Yeah, I especially see that at 2 players.
Yeah.
3 players... It still seems like there might be some resource scarcity there, and we're going
to
explore that for sure. We're going to have to.
Yeah.
It still seems like there might be some scarcity there at 3 players.
But 4 players is definitely like, once somebody has, honestly, even 2 elements out of the 4 they need, if you're still just like, hum-de-hum-de-hum, I'm going to travel around the board and get more stuff, you're not focusing in the right place.
Right. Well, and you know, I mean, that's actually what happened in our game last night. With 4 players, I got attacked, I lost my element. I got attacked again, I lost my 2nd element. And I had 1 more turn before the guy who attacked me twice and won ended up winning the game.
Yes.
And it was just, he just became unstoppable. But the threshold difference between hard to fight and unstoppable is a lot smaller than
it's
I expected.
Real small. Yeah. It's,
yeah, exactly. So I don't think I'm just hurt that I lost. Like, I don't really it's not that. It's just that I feel like there's just a little bit in a whole bunch of little places that, and I don't necessarily know the answer, but that I would have liked to see. However, I will say you are 100% correct. This is just a game for a bunch of teenagers to just beat the snot out of each other and high five at the end and be like, let's eat Doritos. Yeah, like that's the game. Plus, most of the pieces are plastic, so that helps.
Ton of luck, really swingy. That seems to be by design.
Right. Yep. So that's Mythalix.
All right. On to happier later things.
The complete opposite. Happy City.
Still really enjoying Happy City.
Yeah. This is a game, I think I said this last week, I don't remember, that translates really well from the digital to the tabletop. So we played it digitally first.
Yes, on Board Game Arena.
And then we got a copy from Game Right to review, and it just plays really nicely.
Yeah, and it fits really nicely into that family niche. It's got two play modes, a more beginner kind of mode and what they call expert mode. And beginner mode makes me think very much of like a Machikoro without any of the mean stuff and a little bit less luck because it's only a card draws. There's no die rolls. That's a great family game. The expert mode of Happy City just turns it up a notch or two.
It's really not a whole lot.
It's not a huge difference, but it's enough that you have to be a lot more strategic about what you choose.
Sure, sure.
And it does introduce a few mildly mean cards. Mildly. Mm. I really, really like it. And the whole thing plays in like 15 minutes, maybe 20. I think with five players playing for the very first time, it took us half an hour. And that was, you know, all the things kind of stacked up
right
to make it longer.
Yep. This is a game where if somebody gets an engine going before other people, you're playing out the string.
I mean, yeah, but you get that feeling of satisfaction still if you can build your city to be the best it can be, even if you didn't win.
Right. Yep, I agree with that.
So expect a review for that one pretty soon, although I think you've probably heard most of our thoughts.
Yeah. Yep.
Played another Game Right one again, which is Chicken Chicken, again with our son Asher. I do think this is probably better at more than two players, but we keep playing it at two players. This is that memory slapping game.
Oh boy.
I know.
Well, that's actually, hold on. So memory is Asher.
Mm-hmm.
Slapping is Claire.
Mm-hmm.
How have Claire and Asher not played this together yet?
They have once.
Okay. Okay.
The memory part is more important than the slapping part, although the slapping part is important.
Okay.
You're flipping out cards one at a time, and you're basically just trying to keep track of how many eggs are quote unquote available. And as soon as there are five eggs available, you're supposed to slap the pile. The thing is, even in the very basic version of the game, eggs become unavailable when chickens come out and sit on them. Eggs become reavailable when foxes come out and scare off the chickens. And you're not allowed to, like, see all of this happening. Cards are just flipped out one at a time onto a central pile. So you're trying to keep track of all of this in your head.
Sure.
You can, of course, lay all of this stuff out and kind of replay the string if you challenge somebody who slapped it.
What you have described to me mm-hmm. doesn't sound that difficult to track, but I'm sure there's something in here that makes it more difficult to track.
So the basic version, I find not difficult at all to track. However, there are at least five kinds of special cards you can add in, each one of which does something different and makes your brain work in a different way.
Well, because this is how I felt about Inspector Mouse, too. And then I played it and I was like, oh,
yeah. So my feeling with this game has been not so much like, oh, I can't keep up with my memory.
Mm-hmm.
But usually I cannot make that split second of, oh, it's five now, smack.
Especially if a special card comes out that changes the calculations.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So like usually Asher would smack it just as my mind was saying like, oh yeah, this is it.
So what are some examples of the special cards? Because I think the chicken fox thing, like, I think that all makes sense.
You think that makes sense? Yeah. Okay. There is a dog that if it comes out, it waits around until the next fox and scares off the next fox.
Oh, okay. I like that.
There is a farmer. If the farmer comes out, he collects all of the currently available eggs.
Oh, man. So you're starting from scratch on the eggs, but the chickens are still there.
But the chickens on the eggs are still there.
This game is awesome. I am so excited to play this now.
There is a rooster. If the rooster comes out, whoever smacks the pile first needs to say how many eggs are available. And if they get it right, they win.
Okay, sure.
And there's a couple more. There is a disguised fox that you can use with the dog. The disguised fox looks kind of like a chicken, but it's still a fox. So he can sneak past the dog.
Okay.
There is a worm, which will distract the next chicken.
Okay.
And there is an ostrich egg, which is worth 2 eggs, and chickens can't sit on it.
Okay.
But the farmer can collect it.
Okay.
So the more of these the crazier it gets.
I have a critically important question.
Yes.
How did the ostrich egg get on the farm?
I have no idea.
Because the farmer's collecting it, which means the farmer didn't put it out there.
The farmer's like, huh, extra large egg. All right, cool. I have no idea. Wandering ostrich.
So is he like, do I have a chicken that needs some eggs lax?
Boo.
I hope every dad listening to this just laughed because that joke was awesome. Come on, that was an okay joke.
That was an okay joke. All right. It was okay. Right.
Thumbs up if you like that joke. Remember to like and subscribe.
More dad jokes here.
All right. I want to play this game now.
Yeah. The most people I've played it with so far is 3. I'd really like to play it with 4 or 5 people and see just how crazy it gets. Because the idea is the first person who has won 3 times wins the game.
Oh, man. Okay.
So you're not out, and you can always challenge. Failing a challenge means that you lose one of your wins, but if you don't have any, you can't lose any.
Yeah, so you can get slap happy.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So that's Chicken from Game Right?
From Game Right.
All right, we're going Game Right, because I have another Game Right game to talk about. And this is a game we've actually already talked about, Super Mega Lucky Box.
So I'm starting to introduce this to more people and being like, hey, you like Fleet the Dice game, but you want something simpler to play with your kids. This
so we introduced it to some of our best friends last night. I don't know how they felt about it.
They definitely enjoyed it. We had kind of hit that point of the night where they were like, oh, children, and we need to keep track of the children doing the things.
I don't. I'll have to do some interrogation this week to find out how that went. But, I mean, it went great for me, even though I got demolished. I knew by round 3 that I was like, nope.
Yep. No, not happening.
I came in last place by a lot.
By a fair bit. I'm really liking it, but I always like abstract games.
You know what? I feel like this is a great filler game. Like, it's a really good palate cleanser. Like, you put this in between. I mean, you could put this in between Fleet and something else, and it's
you totally could.
Good enough for something like that. You could even, you know, only play 2 rounds kind of thing. It would be pretty easy to cut this thing in half.
Yep, I agree.
I really like it. I love the aesthetic, the kind of the Schoolhouse Rocks aesthetic of the game.
Yes.
It's just fun. I really like it. That's good.
Super Mega Lucky Box plays up to 6 people right out of the box. Mm. If you buy 2 copies of it, you can play up to 12.
Yeah, there's really no reason you can't play with more people.
Yeah, you just need enough score sheets and what are they called? The Lucky Box cards.
Yeah.
In fact, I will also say this is a game that would lend itself very well to being played over Zoom or any other distance software. As long as both sets of people can have the cards in the game, then you can play it together.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could even, you know, you talk about the whole idea of print and plays. I think you could probably put 12 cards on a piece of paper and then just kind of cut them up. And, you know,
sure.
I mean, you could do that very easily. Yep.
Yeah. All right. I got one more. I have been interested in this game for a couple of years since I saw somebody else review it. It's called Catch the Moon.
Yeah, I went to the FLGS and they had it on the discount table.
And you were like, oh, hey, isn't this one of those games you were interested in? I was like, yes, please.
Yep.
Catch the Moon is a dexterity game, a dexterity stacking game, really. But it feels much more grown up and both a little bit more strategic and a little bit more laid back than other stacking games.
Okay.
It was hard to explain. You have all of these ladders and what you do is you start with 2 ladders stuck into the base, whatever configuration you want. Just you start with 2. And then every person when it's their turn, they roll the die and they pick a ladder at random out of the box. The 3 options on the die are your ladder can only touch 1 other ladder. Your ladder must touch exactly 2 other ladders. Or your ladder can touch either 1 or 2 other ladders. And must make the new highest point in the structure.
Okay.
That's it. That's the game. You place the ladders with 1 hand. You can do all kinds of crazy ways of putting them together, you know, trying to hang them off the side. The ladders themselves look kind of wacky, like wide at one end, short at the other. They come in a bunch of different
like
configurations.
Old school ladders.
No, like kind of crooked Pixar ladders.
Okay.
And they come in a bunch of different shapes along those lines. So you could do things like jamming the narrow end into, you know, one of the squares of a different ladder and see if you can just get it to sit there, mm-hmm. sticking out the other side. If you, on your turn, cause any part of the structure to fall and hit either the base or the table, you take what's called a tier of the moon. When one player gets 3 tiers of the moon, the game is over, and whoever has the least tiers wins.
Okay.
Or if you actually manage to use all of the ladders, when all of the ladders are used, whoever has the least tiers wins.
Sure.
And that's it. So it's definitely a do the wackiest things you can, try to make the person after you make the structure fall. A little bit like Gokuku in that respect.
Sure. Or, you know, any other kind of game.
A lot of other stacking type games. Mm-hmm. And it just, it's really pleasant to play with.
I like it.
Yeah. Good game.
All right. And that is...
Catch the Moon.
Catch the Moon. All right. Well, Anitra, that's what we've been playing.
Oh, no.
Do you know what's next?
It's time for 4Science.
It's time for 4Science. So we have some Blue Diamond Extreme Nuts.
Can we start with the one that only says hot and not hotter? I'm scared.
Sure. So we have, let's see, cayenne pepper.
Cayenne pepper, which is hot.
And then
and ghost pepper, which is hotter.
Which is hotter.
Apparently, there is something even hotter because their rating scale goes from 1 to 4.
Mm.
And the ghost pepper is only at a 3.
All right. So here's what we're going to do. So, Anitra, you're going to take one, and I'm going to take a small handful.
That sounds like a good plan.
Number one, I have less issues with inflicting pain on myself. And number two, I like spicy things more than you.
They don't smell that spicy.
They don't smell that spicy. All right, we're going to collect some nuts. We'll be right back.
The lid says, let's get fired up.
Well, I'm fired up. You ready to do this?
Sure.
Good flavor.
Ooh.
These taste good.
Oh, ouch.
No.
Ouch.
No.
It's definitely an ouch, but it does have a good flavor that I can still taste, even though my tongue is tingling.
Yeah, my tongue is tingling. That's not ouch.
The back of my tongue is tingling. That's ouch. I need to take a break and drink some water.
All right. We will, I guess, be right back.
All right. We're back. I got
back.
A drink
of water. Nature has been watered.
I am prepared with a drink of water for the next one because now we have the extreme ghost pepper.
All right.
Blue
so
diamond
the
always.
Cayenne pepper said, let's get fired up. The ghost pepper says, warning, this snack kicks back.
I'm not surprised.
Again, these are blue diamond almonds, extremes.
Yeah.
The cayenne pepper, which were absolutely delicious.
Honestly, I agree that the cayenne pepper ones were delicious. I just can't eat them.
You had one nut?
I had one.
I had a small handful. You have one nut.
I have one ghost pepper.
I have 10.
These are alarmingly red.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. So here we go. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Here we go.
These also taste good. Oh, holy moly. Ouch. I'm not going to finish eating this one before I drink water. My tongue is burning.
They're a little, it's a more lingering spice.
Ow. For sure. The water dealt with the last one. It's not helping with this one.
I had 10 times the almonds and I'm fine.
Okay. I can at least breathe again. My tongue's going to hurt for a while.
The cayenne pepper ones, I think, had a much better flavor.
I can't comment to the flavor of the ghost pepper ones because I feel like my taste buds have been burnt off.
All right, well, that is your 4Science. I mean, I am feeling it. Like, I'm not going to lie to you.
I believe you.
The Blue Diamond Almonds Extremes. We tried cayenne pepper and ghost pepper. The cayenne pepper ones, if you like and eat spicy food, you're not going to find them particularly spicy. I mean, there's a spice there, but it's not like an intolerable spice.
Anitra has chugged the entire glass of water. The ghost pepper ones definitely have a little bit more spice, and it's a more wide-ranging spice.
Yes.
But they, this might sound weird, they taste spicier, which I don't want the taste to be spicy. I don't mind the spicy flavor.
Yes.
I don't want the taste to be spicy. I want the rich, delicious taste of a vindaloo or a tikka masala, where there's a lot of taste there, and they have the back end of spicy, and that's what I got out of the cayenne. Yeah.
There is nothing appealing to me about the ghost.
I mean, there
ones.
Is a taste there. It's I don't think it's as good as the cayenne.
There was a taste before it burned my taste buds off. But the cayenne pepper ones, like, it was spicy, but it was not painful spicy. It was just a little more than I can easily deal with.
The ghost pepper spicy is painful spicy either. Even if the cayenne pepper one had the same spice level as the ghost pepper, I would still prefer it because the taste itself was a better taste. That's what I'm saying.
I understand that. But for those of you wimps in the audience who think they like spicy food, but only in very small amounts.
You're describing yourself right now. Right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just being clear.
Like, not the I won't ever touch spicy food, but like it needs to be in very small quantities. The cayenne pepper ones are doable. I probably would not reach for them and be like, oh yeah, let's have a huge handful. But I wouldn't say no if you offered me some.
Okay. All right. And that's it. Two fire
yes.
flame things out of four
yes.
is the cayenne pepper. So presumably there's something even less spicy. I don't know what it would be.
Maybe.
But yeah. So there's your four science.
Four science.
Blue Diamond Almonds Extreme.
I burned my taste buds off. Four science.
All right. And with that, let us welcome our new members to the Family Gamers community. I'm going to start off and say welcome to Syed.
To Keith.
Welcome to Parinya.
To Jimmy.
Aaron.
And Lara.
Welcome to the Family Gamers community. We are delighted that you are here. We hope that you're having fun in the community and that you're getting some helpful advice, maybe helpful answers to some questions that you might have. We're really, really enjoying what's happening in the community these days. We're very thankful for it. So welcome to the community.
All right. And with that, pretty soon we will have a community post about board games on, with, through screens.
Involving screens.
Yes.
In some stripe.
Yeah.
So, okay. So here's what we're going to do. I mentioned kind of at the beginning of the show that we're going to do like a survey level kind of thing about board games and screens.
Yes.
You know what? I mean, maybe it's worth it for us to consider actually doing screen time episodes again, because that was,
oh yeah,
like the first
that
few
was
episodes of the show, 260
episodes ago.
So we might actually do some episodes on screen time in general, our recommendations around that, some research that we've done. Maybe we'll actually update the research that we've done on screen time and, you know, at least what's worked for us. And I know that that is a topic that we'll get lots of people talking about on the Family Gamers community.
Well,
so,
and for what it's worth, we're in a different place now than we were 5-6 years ago when we did those episodes too.
True.
Like, we have also a teenager.
yeah. So we can talk about a lot of those things maybe on another show, but we today are going to talk about the intersection of these two things. And
yes,
I kind of have four different categories for these, I guess. The first one is app-supported games, and we touched on these on episode 246.
More than touched on them, really.
I mean, it's really what we talked about, but we're going to talk about them again. The next one is a category of games that I call component translated games, and I'll get into that in a minute. And then we're going to talk about games that have rule engines built into them. So you play the game and it does the stuff, etc. And then we're also going to talk about digital only games that pull in a lot of the elements
of
board gaming.
Board gaming. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, let's get started right at the top. Let's talk about app-supported games.
We're big fans of app-supported games.
We
I wouldn't have thought we would be a couple of years ago, but we've had such a great time with a bunch of them. And it's really nice to have games like Chronicles of Crime or Kids Chronicles.
I am
hoping
so excited
for when
for
it's
Kids
coming
Chronicles.
Out.
I
yes.
am basically harassing As from Lucky Duck.
I know.
And being like, listen, when this game is out, we are all over it. We want to cover it, etc.
But also things like Stop Thief or Last Defense or things like that, where the app is doing a lot of the management of stuff for you and making the game more interesting in the process.
So I don't know if you remember. Do you remember Goblin Delivery Service? I think there might have been another word in that, like five minute delivery.
Something
five
like
minute
that,
delivery?
Yeah.
That might be it. So that was a really interesting concept. This was years ago, 4 or 5 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
where it wasn't really an app-supported game, but you literally played a track that was 5 minutes long.
Yeah, like an MP3, yeah.
And that was, you were playing the game in that 5 minutes, and mm-hmm, that was it. Mm-hmm. And that's a really interesting idea, and that's what, like, Last Defense is kind of more like that, only it has some randomization in it.
Yes.
But the point is that, you know, if you consider that track accompaniment as app support for a game,
yeah,
you know, these are games that you cannot play without some kind of an app component.
Right. Well, and
it's just, that's different from, like, I want to play, you know, tabletopmusic.com music,
right,
when you
right.
play. Like, that's not the same.
And let's be fair, there is a long tradition of board games that have this kind of electronic component that is absolutely necessary to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from the Mall Madness series to things like the Star Trek VCR board game.
Sure.
Which is like that audio track where the VCR thing is exactly the same every time, but you need it in order to play the game, and it changes how you play the game.
Yeah, so, I mean, this has been around for a long time. Why do we bring them up? Because we're talking about board games and screens. Our thoughts on this, you know, I think the big thing about this, and we've kind of talked about this when we talked about these games on episode 246, the big thing about these is to really make sure that the process does not become exclusive when you're playing some kind of an app-supported game. And what I mean by exclusive is Chronicles of Crime is a perfect example of this, where when you're looking at the scape, the crime scape, would that be a good term?
Sure, yeah.
The crime scene. It's really easy to lose track of the fact that everybody else wants to know what's going on, and you're just looking at the thing and listing things off. We do recommend, and we recommended on episode 246, that you pretty much have someone assigned to be the person who's controlling the digital device.
Yes.
Just so it's not constant fighting and whatever. Even if you plan for that assignment to change, you need to have a plan.
Yes.
Right? That's the important thing there. So we kind of talked about that, but you still want to find a way to share the experience that you're getting from the app with everyone.
Yes.
Right? Instead of having someone interpret between the analog and the digital, which is not great.
Right. So in our case, a lot of the times we will set up an iPad to play these games so that everybody can see, you know, set it up with a stand so everybody can see. You could also cast your device to a TV or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of these games, that's great. It would not work nearly so well for things like Chronicles of Crime.
I think it's possible. I think you could do the casting for Chronicles of Crime because you're still moving the device and that's still getting cast to the television.
Yeah.
So I think those parts are going to be okay, but you're not going to be able to put in a stand.
Yeah. But even if you can't do that, you figure out ahead of time, before you actually open up and get started on the game, how are we going to handle this? How is everybody going to have a way to interact with the app part of this game?
Totally agree. So if you want to kind of hear more about our thoughts with regards to these kinds of things, check out episode 246 of the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a little bit less than, you know, 15, 20 episodes ago. And I think that that will be helpful. And it'll go into a little bit more depth on this one. Like I said before, this is really kind of 10,000 foot view of all this different stuff. And so the next one on the list is component translated games. What do I mean when I say component translated? We had a discussion back and forth. How do we describe this concept?
So I'm just going to say what these are. This is environments like Tabletopia or Tabletop Simulator, which really try to simulate the feeling of sitting down at a table virtually with all of the pieces to the game.
But no rules engine, none of the process, nothing that's going to remove any of the fiddly parts of a game, right?
Yeah.
That none of that is happening. So if you sit down at a game of, I don't know, power plants.
For example,
on Tabletop Simulator, but none of the people there know how to play the game, you're not playing the game.
You're going to have a real hard time, yeah.
I mean, you're going to have somebody sitting there with a rule book, just like the first time you play any other game.
Yep.
Right? That's how that's going to work. So there's a lot of use cases for this that are really, really great, especially over the last 2 years. I mean, the use of these kinds of tools has absolutely exploded because there's a lot of ramifications, social, emotional, chronological, to getting together to play games.
Yes.
Right? Physical should be in there as well. And a lot of that gets removed when you can play in a digital space. Not all of it. You still have to spend the time, you know, you still are socializing, these kinds of things. but a lot of the complexity, the difficulty gets removed. You can play on Tabletop Simulator with anybody in the world.
Yes. You play
on Tabletopia. I mean, functionally speaking, they're essentially the same. So, I mean, I understand they're completely different products and all those other things, but, you know, in the terms of the way that we're treating them, they're pretty much the same. So these are tools that make all of that a lot easier. I also think that these are tools that make it easier to get into a game that you might not be able to get otherwise.
Yeah, well, and this has been the great thing about virtual conventions,
mm-hmm.
that a lot of times they will have people demonstrating games or running games on Tabletopia or Tabletop Simulator, just like you would in a convention hall.
Right, right. And that actually, like, we saw a lot of vendors at Gen Con who were not doing physical demonstrations because they didn't want everybody touching their stuff,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, them touching everybody's stuff or whatever. And again, this gets back to that physical repercussion thing that I was talking about before. So, you know, these are great tools, but there's still some baggage that comes along with them, which is that somebody's got to know the rules. Somebody's got to be able to kind of help people through. And if there's a teach that's necessary, that teach still has to happen and all this other stuff.
Well, and honestly, because they're trying to pretend that you're sitting down at a table virtually and moving physical pieces around virtually, they can really be a pain in the butt.
They can. You know, and I was kind of an early adopter of Tabletopia, at least, not so much Tabletop Simulator, although we did pick that up in the last year. And it has gotten a lot better. It is
yes.
a lot better than it used to be. But the reality here is that now you have a second set of controls that you need to know how to use.
Yeah, you need to not just know how to play the game, like, oh, I want to move this thing over there. You have to know, how do I click? Where do I drag? How can I drop it again? How can I pull things, you know, out of a bag?
How do I zoom? How do I rotate? All this stuff. So there's this other set of skills that you need. Now, all of those things are common to the platform. So
sure.
It's not like you go from a game of X to a game of Y, and now the scroll is different, right? They're
right,
all common to the platform. So you learn them once and you're good. But it is another thing that you have to kind of be mindful of. Also, I would not recommend... Not that I really think these exist, but I would not recommend a digital tool like this for a kid's game. Because Tabletopia is on iPad. I have not had great experiences with it on iPad.
Mm.
And I don't believe Tabletop Simulator is available in that kind of an environment either. Kids, generally speaking, I would say probably up to about 8 are much better with a touch device than they are with a mouse and a keyboard.
Yeah.
Even after the fact, it can be tricky. If you're a laptop-only house and you don't have mice, it's a real pain. I mean, could you imagine if we were trying to control things in Tabletop Simulator with a touchpad?
I have a hard enough time doing it with a mouse that has a scroll wheel and the whole shebang.
Right.
Yeah.
So Tabletop Simulator, Tabletopia, they offer a lot of really, really great benefits, but there are some kind of tricky things that you have to kind of be aware of, be mindful of, figure out how to work around. And a lot of those things are solved by our next category here.
Yeah, well, our next category is board games online with rule engines. So our personal favorite of these has got to be Board Game Arena.
I think Board Game Arena is just the biggest, the 800-pound gorilla in the room, right? I mean, it's owned by Asmodee.
Especially since it's owned by Asmodee.
Yeah, it kind of fits. It's on brand.
But there are others. There are Yukata and Sovranti and... I have recently been introduced to a website called leechess.org, which is a chess playing website with a rule, actually a whole series of rules engine. You can play all kinds of variations of chess.
Yeah, I mean, these are fantastic, right? I mean, you do kind of need to know the rules of a game to play it, but almost everything, especially on Board Game Arena, the rules are linked.
I was going to say, on Board Game Arena, there's a lot of times where it's like, hey, let's play this new game I've never played before. And I'm like, okay. Scroll. Oh, look, a link to the rules.
Yep, exactly.
How do I play this game?
We're kind of feeling our way through a game of Castles of Burgundy, which I've played before, but it was in like 2018. So,
I am trying really hard to figure out what I'm doing. And since I play on a fairly small laptop screen, it took me until halfway through the game to realize that I am not playing on the same board as everybody else. Whoops.
Only half.
Board. The personal board, but everybody else, their personal boards look the same, and mine looks different. It's just some quirk of how they were passed out pseudo-randomly.
But no, it's just, it's tremendous. I mean, it, because it deals with all of that junk for you. I mean, I will constantly go back to the prime example of this, which is...
Seasons.
Yes. So we learned Seasons on Board Game Arena. I really enjoy the game.
Yep.
I traded for a copy of the game. I played it one time and I was like, there are way too many pieces to keep track of.
Yep.
Way too much crap to move around.
Yep.
I'm never going to play this again.
Nope.
So so I still enjoy it on BGA, but I mean, it's a perfect example of a game where the implementation is excellent. The computer dealing with a lot of the garbage just makes my life so much easier that it's a game that it actually literally is the difference between a game that I would play and a game that I wouldn't play.
Yeah.
And so Board Game Arena is really, really great in that regard. The one downside to Board Game Arena is that with most games, there's no undo button. And
yes.
So if you click on the wrong thing accidentally,
you're done.
Womp womp, you clicked on the wrong thing.
Yep.
And that's the end of it. But it is great. Yukata is a lot less user-friendly, I would say. Board Game Arena does a really great job of having all of the original art from the games and all this other stuff. Yukata is really... I find that more strategic board gamers playing more crunchy games will go to Yukata. That's kind of just my feeling on that. So Vronti is really interesting because it actually has a 3D rendering engine, and so everybody has an avatar, and when you play the game, you're actually playing in a 3D space. I mean, Tabletop Simulator and Tabletopia are actually technically in a 3D space, but in Sovranti, you have a person and you're sitting at a table. So it's really trying to capture the experience of playing a game with people while you're sitting at a table.
But it's still got the rules engine and everything, right? So it can't accidentally do an illegal move.
Right. I don't know how well developed the rule engine is in Sovranti. It certainly is slower to roll out new games. I don't think that that is...
Board Game Arena used to be slow to roll out new
games. That's true. I don't think that's a function of anything difficult with the 3D rendering engine, because I think the people are the same, but it is a little bit slower to rule out new stuff.
Sure.
So let's talk about the last set of games, and then we kind of want to kind of cover at a meta level, like, should you allow your kids to do this stuff? So the last set is games that are digital-only games that have some mechanics that are really board gamey in them, right?
Yeah.
So, the first one of these on this list is a game that I played years ago. I don't even know if this game is still available, to be entirely honest. I think there's like a sequel version of this game that is currently available. And this is the game Soulforge. So have you ever played Ascension? You know Ascension?
Yeah, I played Ascension and you showed me Soulforge back in the day played a little bit of it. This was a card building, deck building game.
Yeah, so Soulforge is a lot like kind of like Rift Force or like Fight for Olympus, where you are actively battling against the person kind of on the other side of the board.
Right.
But the cool thing about this is it totally is a deck builder, but the cards themselves upgrade. So when you play a card, once that card is killed, then it goes back into your deck and it gets discarded. The next time it comes up, it has leveled up.
Yes.
This is not really something that you can do with a physical board game. I mean, you could, but like you'd spend so much time swapping,
it would be
horrible. Yeah. It would be horrible. And so it's really cool the way that it works. It was actually originally developed as an iPad app, it's just really fun. You can play it against other people. You could play it against an AI.
Yep.
Right? And that is Soulforge.
All of these digital-only games, I believe, have that option. The next one I was going to mention was Sumer, which we actually reviewed for the site a couple of years ago.
We did.
Sumer takes the idea of doing a worker placement game and makes it a real-time worker placement game.
Yep.
Once again, something that maybe in theory you could do on a physical board, but it would have so much overhead, it would be a pain in the butt.
Well, there's kind of a dexterity aspect to Sumer, because you are physically moving your dude around the board to go do stuff.
Yes.
Right? And that part you really couldn't do with a board game.
Right, but it's also that you want to be the first one to get somewhere and put your guy there.
But, like, you could be physically racing your guy up the temple,
right.
Is what I'm saying. And you can't really emulate that on a physical board
game. Correct. But that one's really cool. On that one, you can do physical, like, in the same room, playing with other people.
Mm-hmm. It's couch co-op.
Couch compete.
Yeah.
Compete.
It's local competition.
Local, yeah.
Local split screen. But it's not really split screen.
Yeah, it's
local
all on the same
single screen. I don't know what to call this. You're right. It's kind of hard to explain.
Right. See? Yeah.
Local competition.
Yeah. And we've really, really enjoyed it for exactly those reasons, because it's a game that you can't do anywhere else. You can't get this kind of experience anywhere else. It also kind of sort of a little bit ties into our game schooling for this year.
Because you're studying ancient civilization.
Yes. Right. Like Sumeria.
All right. You know, the last one on our list is a game that actually has been super, super popular over the last couple of years. This is Slay the Spire. Slay the Spire is a card game where you are trying to climb a tower and get to the, I guess, heart at the end and slay the spire. I don't know. I never got that far. I was never any good at it.
Yeah.
But this just, again, captures this idea of a lot of a card play. At this point, you're almost blending like old school RPGs with a lot of these board game level mechanics and just really talking about how these games exist. And there are a lot of options out there for these digital kind of games that really draw a lot of inspiration from board game mechanics.
So I realized in all this talking that there's a fifth category that we never touched.
Well, originally in our show notes, we looped this in with the Board Game Arena section, and then we changed stuff around, and this
and then we lost it
somehow.
So board games as apps,
right? This is a huge thing, and I don't know how it fell off.
It just did.
It's ridiculous.
But so this is all over the place. I mean, we've already talked about things like Evolution, you know, which has the education edition and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Through the Ages, I will never play it physically in any way. Twilight Struggle, same thing. There's tons of options on it.
But even like Ticket to Ride and Patchwork. Honestly, I kind of feel like if a board game has been in print for 2 or 3 years and is not showing any signs of going out of print, there's a good chance somebody's trying to make an app out of it.
Yeah, there's tons and tons of these. For the most part, you're going to find these on iOS and Android.
Yes.
They're available on Steam, but most of them are available on touch devices. And so that's where you're going to see this stuff.
I mean, you've got a couple of oddballs out there, like the Sparkle Kitty stuff that's online and the Codenames generator that's online and things like that.
Right.
But most of these are going to be apps for your mobile devices.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we talked about all this stuff. Let's really get down to the bottom line here. Should we be letting our kids play board games online, digitally, whatever? What are the ramifications of doing it? What thresholds do we have for this kind of stuff? I mean, obviously, it's going to depend on the parents, but what are some things that we can think about as we weigh the pros and cons of app-supported games, component-translated games, apps, Board Game Arena, all this stuff?
Sure. Well, here's my thoughts. I am always going to encourage our kids to do the varieties of these that have them interacting with other people.
Like humans.
Like human people.
Like
in the same room.
Yep.
As much as possible.
Okay. So what I'm hearing when I hear that is, even though we separated them in our list, digital only games that involve local competition.
Yes.
And app supported games are pretty much no holds barred.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, you want to do that with your friends who are hanging out? Go for it.
Okay. Okay.
I would probably also say the same thing for a lot of those board game apps we talked about. You know, you want to play Ticket to Ride, but you don't really want to pull out the whole board.
So as long as you're playing it pass and play.
Yes.
As long as it's a board game that supports pass and play on a digital device.
Yeah.
That's probably okay. That works.
But then moving up from there, the next thing you're talking about is playing against an AI. Playing things against an AI, whether that's, you know, your digital only game or your board game as an app, I am generally for, but I start to view that more like you're now playing video games.
Okay, like, sure. So this is screen time.
This is screen time.
So in the Family Gamers household, all screen time is screen time. TV, yes. Video games,
yes.
Whatever.
Playing things with your friends in person is a little different. It's kind of screen time. This I don't want you only doing that, but it's okay. But once you remove other people from the equation, as far as I'm concerned, then this is screen time.
Okay.
I don't care if it's Ticket to Ride or Minecraft, it's screen time. Then comes the really complicated one, which is I want to play with other people over the internet.
Right.
In the Family Gamers household, so far that has been almost never. I think we will be slowly opening that up more because our kids are getting older.
Right. Well, we just bought Nintendo Switch online.
Yes.
I finally relented and picked that up.
But also things like Board Game Arena, which our big gamer child has been asking, can't I please play on Board Game Arena?
So, pause. So, Board Game Arena is great because there is a chat for every table.
Yes.
However, every cuss word and every mutation of every cuss word is flagged in the system.
Yes.
And it is very easy on Board Game Arena to boot someone.
Yes.
Or to complain about someone.
Yes.
If they're being inappropriate. Random thing that will make you chuckle. I am a web developer. Sometimes when I go to Board Game Arena, I have all my dev tools open. You can actually pretty easily find the list of swear words.
Sure.
It's client side.
Sure.
So if you are curious and you are an enterprising parent, you could find them. If this is something that you truly want, you can send me an email at andrew@thefamilygamers.com and I will at minimum explain to you how to do it.
All right.
But I just want to give BGA props because it is clearly something yes. that they've thought about and they continue to maintain.
Yes. I will also say we have let our older children start playing on Lee Chess, mm-hmm. which has very, very limited chat capabilities. You can play against random people or you can play against your friends, just like BGA. But generally, you're not really going to be talking to each other while you play. You're just going to play the game. So I've been a lot more open to, you know, you want to play chess, you're going to get to play against real people, but you don't know where in the world they are or you're never going to talk to them. You're just going to see their username.
They could be Carmen San Diego for all you know.
You'll see their username, and just like BGA, Lee Chess is super great about, has a whole list of rules of what you can't put in your username.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Outside of that, we do not have enough experience yet with things like Yukata and Sovereignty and some of these other platforms to say, sure, kids, go ahead.
You know, I have absolutely, with Tabletop Simulator at least, it has seemed to me like it's a pretty wild, wild west kind of thing.
Yeah.
It hasn't really seemed like it's got a lot of, you know, rules around it. And I really just think that that's kind of the mission of the platform. I'm not knocking it. It's just kind of the way it is, right? So, you know, with something like that, you just got to be aware of sort of, air quote, what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah.
With tools like that, even Tabletopia, it's kind of been a while since I've been on Tabletopia. I don't know if they've enhanced those things since the last time that I was on there. When we use Tabletop Simulator, we're generally actually connecting through a different medium to talk.
Yes.
And so, you know, if your kids are looking to do stuff like that, then you're probably going to need to start thinking about things like Discord and other digital communication
yes.
mediums that your kids might be using. And so, you know, again, this is something, if you've got more questions, you want to ask questions about this stuff, you can certainly reach out to us via all of the ways that we're pretty much about to list, because I think we're wrapping up, and we'll be happy to give you a little bit more information. But, you know, especially with the Tabletop Simulator and the Tabletopias, because those are real time, and this is something we didn't really talk about.
That's true.
Board Game Arena and Yukata, especially, and Lee Chess are asynchronous. So, well, they can be both, but most people
play... You can choose to play asynchronously.
Yeah, most people play asynchronously, which pretty much means you jump in, you do your moves, and then you leave, you'll get an email when it's your turn again.
Mm-hmm.
Tabletop Simulator, Tabletopia, those are real-time pretty much only.
Pretty much only, yeah.
So you're going to be on there actively communicating, which probably means voice, with the people that you're playing with. So it is a little bit harder to police those for that reason.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things like that that are really important to be mindful of. And that's, by the way, why we are, generally speaking, more likely to allow things like Board Game Arena, because it is asynchronous. They have great coverage of their text chat. There is a voice chat baked into BGA, but frankly, it's not very good. and you know, it's something that's pretty easy to mandate that your kids can't use.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty much where we sit on this one. And again, we're going to put a post in the community on this, because I think this is a topic that a lot of people have a lot of opinions about, and we would really, really love to talk about it.
And as you've probably heard even on this podcast, we're kind of in flux with this ourselves, because we're starting to get to the point where we're like, yeah, I guess I could trust my kids to do this in a limited way.
Right. Right. So please reach out to us. There's lots of different ways that you can do this. You can find us on the internet. That's probably the easiest place to find us. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, and on TikTok @FamilyGamersAA. It's the easiest way to get us.
You should definitely check out our Facebook community.
Yeah, that's where this conversation's going to be.
100% where it's going to be. Go to thefamilygamers.com/community or look for The Family Gamers Community on Facebook.
If you have questions, if you want to know how to get that list of words or whatever, you can always just send us an email. You can email me, Andrew, at thefamilygamers.com.
Or if you want to mock me about how I burned my taste buds, send an email to anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Alternately, you could just sympathize with her about it. You know. Anyway, please feel free. It is con season to check out our Family Gamers and Play Games with Your Kids merchandise, t-shirts, hoodies. It is totally hoodie season now.
Yes.
Mugs, etc. at thefamilygamers.com/merch.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you have not already. Tell your friends about it. And if you would be so kind, please leave a review for us at Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you subscribe. Those are super helpful and will get the word out about our podcast to more people in the general public.
That's right. The Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
Well, I think that's going to be it for us this week. I look forward to continuing this conversation in the community.
Absolutely. I really, really think this is something we're going to talk about a lot. Also, brief teaser for either next week or the week after, we're going to have another giveaway because it's been too long. So all we're going to give some stuff away. It's going to be great. But until then, everybody...
Play games with your kids.